MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Chatting with Zane Wilson, co-portfolio manager of the Old Mutual Maximum Return Fund from Old Mutual Investment Group. Zane, appreciate the time today. US and Chinese debt. US is very much government debt. Chinese perhaps sits more at the bank level. Lots of concerns around both of them. What sort of numbers are we talking? I mean, the US number, I keep on hearing, I mean, around what, 35 trillion US dollars?
Yeah, Simon, thanks for having me. So let's do the U.S. debt first. The U.S. debt's about $34 trillion on the government side. But obviously, the relevant thing to look at is what is that as a percentage of GDP and where has it been in the past? It's about 120% of GDP right now. We haven't been here before. If you take out intergovernment debt, it's closer to 100. And the last time we were here was the 1940s. And then on China's side, you know, understanding where the debt actually sits is quite tricky. But excluding the bank debt, the state debt, and if you including state debt, federal government debt, local government debt, and then also these kind of SPVs that China uses for their infrastructure development, which are effectively government-backed, that's also close to 100%. And we haven't really been there before in China either.
I mean, the numbers are absolutely significant. How does the U.S. respond to this debt pile? I mean, I can't imagine they default. I suppose they could print money. They could raise taxes as an option to pay for it. They could maybe cap rates. What is a possible solution for them? This can't get kicked down the road forever, surely.
So we've done an analysis looking at, you know, when does debt typically matter? And by matter, I mean, when do policymakers start paying attention to it, and when do they start looking at what are the potential levers to pull? And we're broadly at that point in the US now because the debt level is high enough, but probably more importantly, the debt service burden is high enough as well. So you're starting to get a squeeze on kind of non-interest expenditure and on the kind of federal and state level.
Yeah.
As you've laid out, the options are raise revenues through taxes, kind of try and generate some inflation and growth, rig the interest rates, and cut expenditure. And what policymakers typically do is it depends on the environment that leads into kind of the debt problem, and that kind of shapes what are the potential levers to pull. So I'll give you an example. If inequality is particularly high, taxes are particularly low, and government is prioritizing, I don't know, infrastructure and kind of competing with foreign competitors, and then what you typically tend to see is higher taxes, more redistribution to kind of low income cohorts, and you don't see expenditure cuts. I think that's more the kind of environment we're in now, where you have bipartisan support for, you know, an infrastructure drive and CHIPS Act and kind of reshoring manufacturing, so that the impetus to spend is bipartisan between Republicans and Democrats, and you have high levels of inequality. So those kind of rising expenditures are to deal with Social Security and Medicare kind of costs. The risk is we're more likely to get an environment where you have incremental increases in taxes. Or further down the road, if that happens very slowly because you're swinging between Democratic and Republican governments, I think the risk of going back to a world where we have capped interest rates is pretty high.
Yeah, it sounds crazy when you say it, but, you know, when options are limited, perhaps that's just it. China, perhaps more difficult. And of course, China has a more direct, perhaps, response to South Africa in that they consume commodities and we need them to be booming to use the commodities that we produce, but also a command economy. So maybe a little more manageable, perhaps, or maybe I'm being overly optimistic for China.
I'm not sure if it's more manageable, because part of the reason why we've got here is the kind of command economy construct. If you're setting out objectives for, you know, we need to build this number of highways, we need to build this number of homes, and that is what is being pushed down to local governments, the return and like profit optimization of those targets for local government doesn't matter as much. It's all about build, and not about is this build being done effectively and is the return on that kind of build good. So we've landed where we are in China because of poor quality of investment, because of the command control economy. So part of what they have to do, and they're starting to show signs of change in direction, is to focus more on the quality of the investment and the management of their kind of SOEs and local governments, and have a more of a return focus. So, you know, that investment that you're kind of debt funding is actually cash generative, which is the problem they've had before, is, you know, they drove the growth, but actually you weren't producing returns. And that's why we've landed where we are in China.
Gotcha. And I take your point on the command economy is actually the problem that has largely created it. In a recent note you put out, you say, okay, we've set up, we've got these two massive debt issues. There's ways they can be resolved. In the meantime, where we're investing. The one obviously is gold. And I've chatted with lots of folks around gold. I've chatted with World Gold Council. We're certainly seeing central banks buying of gold. We see it trading up around 2,500 all-time highs. I mean, gold is the classic sort of response in this case.
Yeah, I think so. You need to think about what are you replacing and what kind of characteristics of the investment you're replacing. What do you want to get? Because we're concerned about the US Treasury debt, it's how do we find alternative diversifiers in our portfolio that do the things that we want when you have, I don't know, slowdowns in growth. And the typical ones you'll have there are gold, yen, franc, maybe one or two others. We like gold, we like the yen, and we're kind of engaged in German bunds, all for slightly different reasons. But kind of if you put them all together, it's because they all give you that diversification benefit, but they've got different tailwinds behind them outside of the kind of diversification benefit.
Got your point. And gold, we understand. Talk to me about the yen trade. And it's unrelated, but it just a couple of weeks ago when there was huge panic around the Japanese market and the yen, that has completely faded away. But what's the thinking behind the liking in the yen?
So Japan is a significant capital exporter. What you usually see when you have equity markets kind of slowing down, typically you'll have that capital returning back to Japan. So you tend to have strength of the yen during slowdowns and weakness of the yen kind of when global growth is good and those carry trades are funded. That's the standard model every cycle. What we think is kind of additive to that this cycle is that the inflation trends in Japan we think are structural. So I think we've exited deflation, and that's because of the labor market dynamics and less so about, you know, the yen importing or exporting inflation. And because those structural trends have changed, we think, you know, over the next 2, 3, 4 years, we're going to continue to see the BOJ incrementally hiking rates. And that's potentially an environment where the rest of the world is cutting. And that helps the kind of interest rate differential. Plus, you have your standard like defensiveness of the currency. So that positions the yen quite well in terms of having a different driver besides just a risk or beneficiary.
Gotcha. The German bunds, I mean, is that just because with respect to Germany and Germans, I mean, they've been boringly fiscally disciplined forever and a day and haven't gone the route of either the US or China?
I think that's exactly it. So one is the fiscal prudence and discipline. And the other one is that the tendency that you have in kind of if you look at European bonds is that when Europe is struggling and growth is not great, which is when we want to have these diversifiers work, you will see a flight to safety within Europe, where Southern European spreads widen and everyone's selling Italian, Spanish, occasionally like French bonds, and German bunds tend to benefit from that. So you get this kind of double tailwind from one, the fiscal prudence is quite robust, so you don't have to worry about yields going up a lot. In risk off, they benefit from money flowing into Germany and away from the rest of Europe.
Gotcha. We'll leave it there. Zane Wilson, co-portfolio manager, Old Mutual Maximum Return Fund from Old Mutual Investment Group. Zane, appreciate the time.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.